Mentioned earlier that my niece is in France. She's on an educational tour of France and Spain with other kids in her high school. I may need to throw air quotes up around educational, but they are actually learning a lot of stuff and having a swell time. So she's in France and Spain. I'm not sure which city it was, but where she was yesterday, it was 105 degrees, and they do not have air conditioning there. One other note, we were talking about guns and how you feel about that mall shooter. There were two, the good guy and the bad guy. John, what if there are two heroes that day and they see each other with a gun and each thinks the other is a bad guy? 847 says, I agree with you, John, but thank goodness that that brave man was there. Thank God for the shooter. That is the one that took the other one down. Who else is protecting us? Do not cast doubt. Of course, we don't want to rely on armed 22-year-olds, but what else is there? Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, a frequent guest and sometimes host here. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm good, John. I was actually in Madrid last week, and it was 100 degrees. It's very hot. Kidding.
Wow. You know, I would expect a little of that, say, from a Madrid, but still, 100 is off the charts for them there, isn't it?
It's hot. It was really hot.
Did you have AC in your hotel?
Fortunately, I had AC. I feel for your niece.
Yeah. Well, and I think the hotels, especially ones that, you know, Americans tend to stay in, tend to be air-conditioned, not always very well.
Correct.
But 95% of the homes in England, 95, do not have air conditioning.
It's unbelievable.
You've been thinking about this gun situation, too. What are you saying about that, Tom?
Well, I just, you know, I live in Highland Park, and I raised my family there, and I grew up there, and so it hit close to home. But I just think in general, you know, what's the definition of insanity, banging your head against the wall and hoping for a different result? And I think that or I just butchered two cliches, I think.
But I get the point.
You get my point. And where we're at is I think there's a lot of problems. I think mental health is a problem, and we need to fix that, too. We can try something. Hey, if the shootings don't go down and 2 years, then we should take your assault weapons back. But we got to try something different. And I think that is a good logical start to benefit the majority of people. And, you know, the cliche that's going around or the phrase that's going around now is it shouldn't be harder to get a driver's license than an AR-15. And I think that assault weapons are kind of in that category, and we've just got to try something different.
Yeah. What is this a concern of yours? That is a conversation you have with clients or employees about gun policy in businesses?
No, I don't think it's really a conversation we have about policy. I think it's a conversation that is a CEO and a leader of a company I'm not afraid to have. And if people disagree with me, then hopefully they disagree with me respectfully, and they have their point of view and I have mine. And to me, that's how you reach compromise, is you talk about things. Sometimes you agree to disagree, and you try to make compromise. And I would hope that our political parties would try to do the same thing, that if one side agrees with the banning of assault weapons, that the other side would be willing to give something in order to get that. And hopefully we can get back to that type of government and do what's best for society.
You wrote, if business leaders don't speak up when needed, what's the point of being leaders? And I think I guess you have to be sort of smart about the topics you decide to opine about, because it seems to me like sometimes when businesses take a social stand on something, they borrow more trouble than it's worth. I'm not saying gun policy is one of them, but it's interesting when, you know, your responsibility is fiduciary. What are you doing taking a side on an issue that you don't have to? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's several reasons to do it. One is you feel so strongly about something that you want to use your position to help it. The other is you also have employees, and you've got to understand the types of people that work for you or that you want to attract and what they stand for. And in this age of trying to compete for talent with record low unemployment, you've got to make a stand somewhere to show people that you're different, that you're not afraid to make a stand for what you believe in. And I think if you stand for everything, you probably stand for nothing. So you've got to pick and choose your battles and choose them wisely. But I, you know, having been, I wasn't at the parade, but having been in Highland Park, you see this, and it's like, you know what, this is something that touched everybody in Chicago, and not that, that we shouldn't have been more affected by Parkland or Columbine 20 years ago or what have you, but this was in the Chicagoland area and it hit home, and I felt that for my employees, that it was important for them to know what I stood for and what I worked for, and that was why I came out and said it.
And on LinkedIn, you said this, I'm a CEO, I have my FOID card, I have a shotgun, I am anti-assault weapons. I grew up and raised my family in Highland Park. Assault weapons are not needed outside of the police and the military. That's a business leader being a leader, and that's Tom Gimbel. Nice to talk to you today, Tom.
Thanks, John. Be well and stay healthy.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Michael Bright's the CEO of Structured Finance Association. Michael, let's talk a little bit about what the Fed's going to do and what they should do. Sound good?
I was hoping we could talk about that Mediterranean cruise a little bit longer. You've got
Let's do that.
That sounds more fun, but sure, we could talk about inflation and the Fed if you'd like to do that.
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, the dollar's doing pretty well in Europe right now, but 75 or 1, what do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I mean, after that 9.1 print, I was in the camp of saying these guys have got to get ahead of it and be pretty aggressive about the message that they're sending to the market. And the reason that I think it's really important for the Fed to be as aggressive as possible is that, their very credibility is at stake. So the more credibility that the central bank has in that the market believes that they will not let inflation get out of hand, the market then will do some of the job for them. And right now, there's some questions about their credibility. And so you keep getting these prints that are like exceptionally high, even though it's true that their headline numbers and the core data is more complex, but I would lean on the aggressive side. All of that said, I think the Fed keeps saying that, for the moment, they're going to stick with 75 basis points. So maybe they will go another round there. But we can't keep getting inflation prints in 8 and 9% when it's really meant to be between 1.5 and 2 without taking some more extreme measures.
Why do you say credibility of the Fed?
Well, because one of the things that will keep inflation expectations tampered, so that is businesses saying, look, we don't need to plan for, a plunging currency or plan for a dollar, whose value is just going to completely tank. That won't happen because we have a central bank that ensures that that won't happen. And the number one mandate of the Federal Reserve, in addition to a bunch of the other stuff they do, but their number one mandate is to maintain price stability in the economy. And so they do that by looking at a basket of goods that consumers buy, and they adjust interest rates and the monetary supply to keep, prices stable. If expectations and credibility from the business community and from consumers comes untethered, meaning we start to say, I don't think these guys can get a handle on it, then that creates its own vicious cycle, because workers start to demand more, businesses start to feel that they can charge more, and that's how you kind of get this runaway effect. I don't think we're there, but I think you can't keep having prints in the 9s and the 8s without that being a real risk.
You say businesses can't just feel like they can charge whatever they want because that'll create runaway inflation. Do you think some businesses are, in fact, inflating prices beyond what they need to be?
I don't think that's not sort of the view that I have. I mean, I don't think that's really the attack. Those attacks, I don't think, are very justified. I think that the business community is actually in a very difficult spot. So one of the more confusing but interesting dynamics in our economy right now is this labor market. So, jobs are very high. The unemployment rate is very low. We don't really know. A lot of workers left the workforce at the beginning of COVID for a variety of reasons. And so businesses are having a really difficult time attracting labor. As anybody who's gone to a restaurant or been in the service industry or tried to fly recently, the cancellation. And this is all a function of not having enough employees, because a lot of people left the labor market for, like I said, a number of different reasons. And so businesses have to figure out how to fix that. And one of the ways they can attract workers is to give them extra benefits, let them work from home, but also more money. And a lot of that can get passed on to the consumer, especially in an environment where consumers are of the mindset that, hey, inflation is here and we have to deal with it. And so that just creates a cycle.
Well, back to what the Fed's doing or has done, I wonder if Now, you would agree, this isn't that I necessarily feel this way, but it seems to me like one could make the argument that the circumstances that have led to the recession we are or aren't in right now are so unique. This isn't your run-of-the-mill downward cycle that it would have been hard for them to have anticipated the place we were in. Did they know the war in Russia and Ukraine was going to be protracted, that we'd get a fourth wave of COVID, et cetera, et cetera?
No, and I am not a Fed basher, and I think that the job is very difficult in looking at some of this data and predicting what's going to happen and how to maneuver around it is no easy task. That said, you know, Larry Summers famously wrote an op-ed about 18 months ago saying, I'm seeing signs of inflation coming. Congress ignored it. They still passed another $1.9 trillion COVID package. The Fed didn't do anything with rates. You know, we've been arguably sowing the seeds of this for quite some time. I think that quantitative easing in the wake of the financial crisis was an important thing to do to protect against deflation. But I think we probably became pretty complacent with it and pretty, you know, lazy about the fact that their balance sheet was going in the $8 trillion range. I mean, that is completely unprecedented. And let's be honest, getting our fiscal house in order in Congress, that's just been completely irresponsible. Think back to the super committees in 2011, 2012, nothing ever came from that. And instead, we just kept spending money. So I completely agree with you that the price shocks from oil and the price shocks from COVID and supply chain issue disruptions that we've seen from that, those are difficult and impossible to anticipate. And I would never hold somebody to account for that. But the timber, the kindling wood, I should say, had been getting piled up for years in advance. And some of that is kind of coming home to roost now.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm Michael Bright, CEO of Structured Finance Association. Interesting thoughts today, Michael. Thanks for helping us out today.
Thank you. See you on the ship.
I hope so. Kiana DeStazi is the marketing director for the Chicago Loop Alliance. You can always search loopchicago.com. These have always been helpful and interesting conversations. Kiana, welcome back to WGN. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, John.
Talk to me a little bit about the award-winning event series with First Sundays on State. I'm reading from your material there.
Well, thank you. Yes, so Sundays on State was named the best new event in Chicago last year, and it is coming back by popular demand starting this Sunday and going every other Sunday until September 4th, which is Labor Day weekend.
I wasn't sure when you described this to us last year that it was going to be a hit. Did it do everything that you'd hoped it would be? Did people come down and use State that way?
Oh, it was a huge hit last year. Over 500,000 people attended the events, and we got people from every single neighborhood in the city of Chicago and beyond. The participants, the vendors in the street represented local, small, and minority-owned businesses from all over the city. And this year, we're able to accomplish that and more. This year, we have 70% of the vendors that are joining us out in the street are from underrepresented businesses, mostly women and Black and Latinx-owned businesses. And the response has been great. There was a huge economic impact to the Loop last year, and we're trying to, you know, accelerate the economic recovery after these tough couple years. So it's sort of done all that and more, and we're very excited about this year's event.
It's called Sundays on State. Do you then close off part of State, or do you just put stuff adjacent to State?
Oh, yes. Thanks for asking. So Sundays on State is pretty special because we take the most iconic street in the city of Chicago, State Street, and we close it off from Monroe all the way to Lake. So that is the most iconic section right in front of the Chicago Theater sign, right in front of Macy's. That whole area in front of Target, Block 37, is all closed down. It's a huge wide street. It's not your average street festival. You have plenty of space. There's active recreation, arts and culture, food and drink, fun people doing things out on the street. Divvy's going to be test riding bikes, e-bikes and scooters, and Chicago Fire is going to be there. It's really going to be a great time.
Is there a stage for music? Do you entertain that way?
Yes, we have a few different areas of performance and scheduled classes. So there is a main stage at Monroe, there's another stage at Lake, and then there's three different performance areas. And at these different areas, there's not only straightforward music playing, all sorts of different kinds, reggaeton, hip-hop, classical. We also have dance and fitness classes. There's going to be DJs all day. There's sort of something for everyone at this festival, which is so great about it.
Yeah. So it sounds like you don't have to come for a show per se. Just go walk up and down State Street and take in whatever happens to be going on at the time.
Exactly. And the times are a little bit different this year. So it's 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. And anytime during that, you can really come and expect to be thrilled and kind of have a good time with surprises. But I would say that we also have a full schedule online. So if there's something in particular you're looking for, just go to loopchicago.com/Sundays and you'll see the full schedule for July 24th. And then most of the details are actually on there for a lot of the other dates as well.
Talk a little bit about the food and beverage at Sundays on State.
Sure. So we have a wide variety of offerings there as well. Again, the Walnut Room from Macy's is joining us down on the street, which is really spectacular. We have Cynthia's Gumbo Express, which has a variety of options, including plant-based vegan options. There is a little bit something for everyone. We have sweets, we have taco trucks, we have popcorn, we have ice cream, you know, everything you could expect at a great event. But the nice thing about this is that it's really predominantly all local vendors. So you're not going to just see, you know, your average carnival truck rolling up. These are all local Chicago-based businesses that are selling really delicious food and drink.
So how do people do it then? Do they come and park downtown somewhere nearby? Are they training in maybe and walking up from Union Station? How do you recommend people actually do this?
I'm so glad you asked. There's so many options, really options for everyone. If you were driving in, as you mentioned, we do have a great parking deal with Millennium Garages. So if you go to loopchicago.com/Sundays, you can find that. It's called a Loop Deal, and they have a great parking offer for Sundays on State specifically. We also, State Street is the most accessible place in the city of Chicago. You can get there from the Red Line. You can get there from all the other color train lines that go around the Loop. You can get there on the bus. You can bike in, you can walk, you can scooter, you can divvy. We have lots of different options for, it's basically the most accessible place you could be. So we're really looking forward to people joining us on the street. And the street is going to be free from cars. There will be no automobiles or buses or anything like that in the street from those locations. I should note that there are a couple cross streets across State Street where there will be east-west traffic. So you will be able to get by downtown. It will not be a huge headache for those of you that might be spending time in the Loop doing other things.
Are the big stores open then? Is Macy's still open then for this event?
Oh, definitely. Macy's loves this event. They're a major generous supporting sponsor. And last year, this event really helped them get back to 2019 levels for some of the first times. So these stores right here on State Street, in addition to the local entrepreneurs supported by this event out on the street, these stalwart stores really out here on State Street, like Macy's and Target and Block 37 and Walgreens, really see an uptick of in traffic, which is desperately needed during the difficult economic times some of our main stores here on State Street have been having.
Boy, oh, for weather like we've been having lately. I guess, what's the forecast for Sunday? It's going to be warm, I'm pretty sure. I don't think it's supposed to be raining.
It's a rain or shine event. Last year, you know, it rained on our first Sundays on State, and we still managed to have a great time. It will be taking place regardless. Obviously, if there's rain, there will be certain accommodations made, and certain things might not be possible. But we will be out there no matter what. So we hope to see you this Sunday on State Street.
Forecast high is 81 degrees for that day and some clouds.
Beautiful.
So I think that's going to work just fine. Kiana DeSassi.
Oh, and there's,
go ahead, yes. Kiana.
And there's drinks out on the street, John, so I hope to see you there. Maybe we can have a beer or a glass of wine or something.
I was going to ask about that, but I'm glad that you brought it up. So just go to loopchicago.com. That'll get me to the landing page and maybe /Sundays if I want.
Yeah, either way works, but loopchicago.com/Sundays will take you right there. Oh, and I forgot. If you RSVP in advance, which is free, you are automatically entered to win a $1,000 Loops vacation package. So that's the extra cherry on the Sunday.
Nicely done, Sunday. Kiana. Yeah, we got it. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the event, and good luck.
All right. Thank you so much, John. Have a good day.
Chicago Loop Alliance getting you down into the Loop on a Sunday, starting this Sunday, 12:43. Steve Grzanich is away today. Dave Schwann has more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Carvana is suspended from selling cars in Illinois again. The Secretary of State's office says they're failing to properly process car titles and registrations and giving Illinois car buyers temporary out-of-state license plates. Carvana had issues with Illinois sales earlier this year. Clio, a provider of ecosystem software, opened its new office space at 111 West Jackson in Chicago. Chicago yesterday. The 5,000-square-foot location should appeal to customers, employees, and business partners. Plans call for Clio to have over 100 employees here and over 400 employees worldwide by year's end. Toys R Us will have a new home inside Macy's department stores here and across the country starting later this month. It's part of their comeback from bankruptcy 5 years ago. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Keep rolling now with the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. And we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience live in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Cue the movie trailer announcer.
Imagine your greatest fears.
Yeah, that rattle. Yeah, that's a dead giveaway, isn't it? For many of us, and I'm including myself, snakes are the stuff of nightmares. They put the eek in ecology. There is even a name for the fear of snakes.
Ophidiophobia.
And no joke, says Dr. Maureen Frank, a snake expert at Texas A&M.
That's a very real thing, and I realize that for some people, even just seeing a picture of a snake is too much.
But here's the thing. For farmers and gardeners, snakes can be friends.
Snakes eat a lot of mice and rats, and mice and rats can carry disease, and snakes keep those populations down.
And especially for gardeners, there's the garter snake.
And they're kind of a fun one to talk about because they're a smaller snake. They're going to eat a lot of our garden pests, like different insects and slugs.
So let's say you're out in the yard or out on the farm and you come across a snake. What do you do?
If it's in a good spot, leave it where it is.
Yeah, but what if it's in a place where you'd rather it not be?
You can also use a very long-handled tool to guide it out, but it's really best if you just leave it. Give it its space to get out from wherever it is.
And she reminds us that even non-poisonous snakes will bite if they're feeling threatened. And if you are bitten?
If you can take a picture of it, that's fine. Otherwise, if you can just describe it when you get to the doctor, but don't try to kill it or capture it or anything like that, because you're more likely to get bit again.
And even if you're sure the snake that sank its fangs into you is not poisonous?
There's still a risk of infection. So if the bite punctures your skin, go wash it really well with soap and water.
And according to the TV westerns I watched as a kid, alcohol played a part in the treatment of snake bite, topically or internally. And with that in mind, although this may have gotten you laughed out of the Old West, today is National Daiquiri Day. And be careful out there. That's the business of food and snakes on 720 WGN.
I'm trading notes with Steve Alexander. You just heard his report about snakes, and he confesses that he has a near paralytic fear of snakes.
Gonna have nightmares tonight, John.
I'm sorry. Well, it was your business of food report that started it. And I just mentioned to him that they're in my yard all the time. And I don't mean to push your buttons. So I'll stop talking to you.
Okay. All right.
I'll move on with the Wintrust Business Lunch. And Sarah Foster, an analyst at Bankrate. Visit bankrate.com. Hey, Sarah, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you today?
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, John.
You don't have a fear of snakes, do you?
I think I do have a fear of snakes in addition to other things that I would not like to deal with, like spiders. So,
okay. Well, we've gone down the path
scary.
I didn't anticipate here. Let's talk about high interest rates then. Let's talk about the fact that social media makes nearly half of Gen Z and millennials feel negatively about their finances. It's a headline on Bankrate.com that you wrote a little bit about. Why did you pick this story? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, as a millennial myself, I think I've really obviously been struck by just how much social media impacts my life in addition to some of my friends. And I think it was really eye-opening to me to learn that something like TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, platforms like that have seemingly little to do with money end up impacting our perceptions of our finances even more than things that you'd think social media would impact, like our appearances, our personal relationships, right, the way we feel about our careers or our successes. I think it obviously speaks to what we might not really realize about social media, but, you know, the more awareness we bring to it is important, which is the fact that a lot of the competition we feel about maybe comparing ourselves to others, wanting things through social media, that all ends up impacting our wallets, and more often than not, people end up regretting it.
Yeah, I suppose it's not too hard to connect the dots, right? If you fear of missing out on all the fun people are having, That costs money too, and maybe we don't necessarily think about it that way.
Yeah, and I think that's really the great way to look at it, especially, you know, the summer is the perfect example because I myself spending a lot of time on Instagram, I see my friends, I see influencers I follow taking these amazing summer vacations. And I think me as a person, that makes me feel a little bit left out. Obviously, I would love to be in Greece right now, but the kind of from a personal finance perspective and from my bank rate, putting my bank rate hat on, you know, I don't necessarily see the full picture. You start to wonder, you know, what it took to take that vacation. You don't know necessarily if that person had to go into debt to travel. I think knowing that social media is only part of the picture, it's not really necessarily telling you the whole story, I think is really important, especially as it relates to our personal finances.
Right. So as much as we try and tend to say, all right, kids, if you're a parent and you say, well, don't let your social media platforms make you feel bad about yourself or your friendships or your grades or your sporting ability, whatever, you say that actually it weighs on our perceptions of our financial wellness as much as anything.
Yeah. And I think, you know, children, we saw in our survey that children really, parents are worried that they could be the most at risk, which about 64% of them said that they worried their children under 18 were learning unrealistic expectations about money on the platform. And I think it's important to really recognize that social media, for all its benefits and for all its faults.
If you've ever ordered food for work, you understand. It's different.
Boy, all of a sudden some buttons started hitting and I don't know why they hit. Let's go back to our guest. You were talking a little bit about parents worrying about the fact that their kids get these unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, and I think it's obviously a very important kind of discussion because we think about children and they might necessarily have, you know, the education under their belt just yet, and especially when you think about the fact that lots of states don't really require personal finance education, kind of complicating the picture. I think it's really difficult for children at least to learn lessons about money that and to have those really strong lessons, I think, especially in the world of social media. And I think about this example all the time, which the GameStop phenomenon, I was really kind of fascinated with how much it spread like wildfire, especially on social media. But because it was purported so frequently, I think a lot of people saw it as maybe a get-rich-quick scheme, and they didn't necessarily take a step back and think about, you know, the fundamentals of it all. And that's kind of the perfect example here about how social media can be kind of challenging.
Well, look what's happened to some cryptocurrencies as well. The value on those has plummeted on a lot of them. And boy, on social media, that was all the chatter, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, crypto is also the perfect kind of story here too. But I think what it kind of gives an opportunity for maybe parents and individuals using social media themselves is the fact that, you know, there are good people out there who do their best to inform others and not just talk about their money successes, but also kind of their money failures and use it as really an honest jumping off point to help teach people these better lessons. I think, you know, recognizing that and doing your best to make sure you're not just in this echo chamber of keeping up with the Joneses is going to be really important moving forward.
Okay, there's you're forewarned, parents. You can't say you didn't know now. Check out Bankrate.com, Sarah Foster's article about what your kids might be thinking about their financial situation because of social platforms. Maybe you too. Interesting reporting today. Sarah, thanks for your time.
Great to be here. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to join us.